This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
This podcast episode is a joint GHIL lecture in cooperation with the IHR's Modern German History Seminar, given by Julia Angster, Professor of Modern History at the University of Mannheim. Her lecture, Post-Democracy, Globalization, Democracy and the Nation-State in Germany after 1990, asks if globalization is a threat to democracy. From the 1990s to the late 2010s, social scientists, economists and historians in Western countries thought so. They worried about a loss of national sovereignty and agency, about national identity, and most of all, about liberal democracy, which was based upon the national framing of state and society. This discourse was most prominent in post-unification Germany. Julia Angster's lecture looks at perceptions of globalization and analyzes the underlying assumptions about democracy and statehood. She argues that this was not a crisis of democracy, but a crisis of national patterns of political thought dating back to the 19th century.
Thanks ever so much, Dr. Gehring, for this kind and very flattering introductions. Imagine my ears being red now. I have to live up to this, right? And also I would like to thank the German Historical Institute and the Modern German History Seminar for inviting me. It's a great pleasure being back, and I've missed this place. And especially, have you noticed the distracting ceiling? I've missed it. It's lovely being back, and thanks to the director as well for having me. Now, my topic today is the popular notion that globalization is a threat to democracy. This has to do with the perception of the global and the national as distinct and antagonistic realms, and with the conviction that globalization weakens and undermines the nation state. The nation state, in turn, is seen as the institutional framework which alone can enable and guarantee democracy. For more than two decades, that is, from the mid-90s to the late 2010s, social scientists, economists, legal scholars, and historians in Western countries worried about the impact of globalization. It was undermining national sovereignty and agency, weakening national identity, and bringing about the decline of liberal democracy, which obviously could only exist within the nation state. Now, most of them were liberals, social democrats, or moderate conservatives. Now, finding left-wingers and liberals rooting for the nation-state and worrying about globalization might seem counterintuitive. A liberal understanding of democracy tends not to go well with traditional nationalism. Global connectivity, on the other hand, is considered beneficial, at least in historiography, considered an open and progressive turn away from the nationalistic demarcations of the past. Hostility towards globalization is usually to be expected among the populist right and the radical left, among groups who tend to also reject parliamentary democracy. In the 2010s, this right-wing opposition to all things global was very prominent in Western democratic countries, such as the United Kingdom and the United States, as well as France and Germany. It was the fear of parties such as the Alternative for Germany, AfD, the Rassemblement National, or the United Kingdom Independence Party, but also of leftist protest movements such as the French Yellow Vests. From their perspective, the people, in quotation marks, stood in opposition to the establishment, the elites, and parliament. Especially Trumpists viewed the liberal so-called internationalist elites and their so-called deep state as enemies acting against the interests of the American people. They saw their political opponents as globalists, which, by the way, is also anti-Semitic dog whistling. And they condemned these opponents as, and I quote, profiteers of globalization or as representatives of an open society. Make America great again and bring back control are nationalistic demands. They were aimed against globalization and against Europeanization, and specifically against migration. They basically went against economic and cultural aspects of transnational integration. This is familiar, but not astonishing. What needs explanation, however, is the plethora of misgivings and warnings by supporters of liberal democracy. These are some examples, who also saw globalization as a threat to democracy. These were to be found in many Western countries, but most conspicuously in post-unification Germany. This, therefore, this paper, is meant as a contribution to a history of German political thought after 1990. So it is a history of ideas, not a history of globalization. Examples for such warnings would be the writings by philosophers Jürgen Habermas and Sheila Ben Habib, the political scientists Michael Zürn and Colin Crouch, who of course is British, but found a broad readership in Germany, the historians Charles S. Mayer, Heinrich August Winkler and Wolfgang Reinhardt, the sociologists Wolfgang Streeck and Fritz W. Scharpf, and the former Federal Constitutional Court judges Udo Di Fabio and Dieter Grimm. I'm using their publications as source material for analyzing their basic assumptions about democracy, society, and statehood. I'm interested in the significance that the national framework of state and society had for their understanding of democracy. My argument is that this was quite obviously not the end of the nation state, nor even a crisis of democracy. Instead, this was a crisis of national patterns of political thought dating back to the 1960s and 70s and even to the 19th century. And these patterns lost their self-evidence and power due to a process of profound change in German society and culture. Now be warned, my paper has four parts. First, I will try to define the two concepts which are central to my argument, globalization and the nation state. Secondly, I will present an overview over the narratives of crisis, as I have termed them, sort their core arguments, and ask for their underlying assumptions. What do these authors mean by globalization? What are the pertinent concepts of democracy, society, and state? Thirdly, I'm going to historicize, I'm trying to historicize these notions and put them in context. These ideas of democracy were formed and became basically hegemonic in West Germany between 1960 and 90. My last chapter, which is rather a conclusion and shorter, will show how, after the end of the Cold War, these concepts lost their hegemonic role and instead became the object of political conflict. A fight for the renegotiation of the very meaning of democracy and of society. This conflict was ostensibly about globalization as a threat from the outside. In fact, it was about concepts of government at home, and it was also a struggle for hegemony over the political discourse. My first chapter is called Globalization and the Nation State. A broad and open definition of the nation state, let's start with the nation state, would be, and here I quote the political scientist Edgar Grande, it's my translation, so it's mine, it's not his fault. A historical constellation of norms, institutions, techniques of rule, and procedures through which it has been possible to integrate modern society politically and to make collectively binding decisions within them. Traditionally, in Germany, the state was defined as the union of a people, a territory, and legitimate state authority. This definition harks back to Max Weber and Georg Jelinek to the early 20th century. That connection of territory, population, and authority is crucial for modern concepts of statehood. Its origins lie in the processes of nation building of 19th century Europe. Territoriality plays a crucial role here. As Mayer has put it, the state controlled a border political space, which created the framework for national and often ethnic identity. Here then, decision space, that is, the writ of effective legislation, shared the same boundaries with identity space. And in fact, this connection of a homogeneous nation to a bounded territory has never been the natural state of things. Far from it. but it is a nearly hegemonic concept arising in the second half of the 19th century, and it was taken for granted from the 1860s to the 1980s, and at that time it did not need any justification or explaining. Now, this changed, however, when from the 1970s onward, and more pronounced since the 1990s, the global economy underwent significant structural transformation. They have brought new responsibilities for government, for governments which the nation-state could no longer fulfill alone. As a reaction, new forms of European and global governance were established. The European Union, for instance, allowed their members an active role in shaping the processes of globalization through regulation and standardization. As a result, the member states regained agency. Now, the term globalization usually refers to global economic interdependence. For instance, by the deregulation of financial markets and the relocation of industrial production. Globalization in this structural sense is a product of policies by nation states. But globalization, of course, also refers to global entanglement by cultural transnationalization and migration. So there's more to it than the economy. In any case, it would be much more precise to speak of globalizations in the plural. I find it doesn't make much sense to blend such different developments as a worldwide container shipping on the one hand and the transition from Coronation Street to TikTok on the other. The term globalization in the singular has simplifying functions. It amalgamates these disparate developments into a single process that is endowed with a coherent meaning. This way, this multi-layered structural, cultural, and ideational development of the last two decades can be grasped and debated. It's a moniker. And also, it's a term from the source material, not an analytically useful term. However, political thought has not kept pace with the accompanying change and expanding complexity of statehood. If we look at the sociological, political science, and historical literature of the 1990s and 2000s, globalization is often interpreted as a development that is independent of the state and which comes from the outside. It threatens the very existence of the nation state. Often, this literature, hang on, comes from the outside, here. That would have been my image for globalization. I'm in a reel, sorry. And this is my rather stupid, I admit, image for comes from the outside and threatens the nation state. It was very hard to find an illustration for this sentence. So anyhow, it comes from the outside, threatens the existence of the nation state. My point is, this literature does not present the ongoing transformation of the state as providing new and more adequate means for governance. Rather, it is being lamented as a decline, even as the end of the nation state. My second chapter is called Globalization as a Threat to the Nation State, Narratives of a Crisis. This is the German term Krisennarrativ that I couldn't translate any better into English. I hope it's making sense. Narratives that, how to say, paint a situation of crisis. Lament is also nice, but I found it derogatory, so I didn't. Let's go to these narratives of a crisis and sort them. I've sorted them into three topics. First is national autonomy and sovereignty. The second is the economy and the welfare state, who go together. And the last is society and national identity. Since the late 1990s, social scientists, legal scholars, and in some cases historians in Western countries have expressed concerns about the impact of globalization upon the state. These concerns are an interdisciplinary and transnational phenomenon. Those narratives essentially revolve around these three topics that I've already mentioned, which I don't mention again now. So, let me begin with liberal and conservative authors. Like the more conservative part of my source material, they saw globalization as a threat to the autonomy and sovereignty of the nation state. This was due to the rise of supranational and non-state actors in the international arena. These authors saw two central problems. First, and it's a German word, Entstaatlichung, that is, the loss of the government's or the state's role in governance as new actors gained influence over international and national policies. I can easily give you some examples later in the discussion if you want. And secondly, the denationalization of statehood through European integration. By some social scientists and legal experts, this was interpreted as a loss of national sovereignty and a threat to democracy. Examples include Stephen D. Krasner, who you see here on the PowerPoint, a political scientist at Stanford University, who then became head of the policy planning department in the State Department of the George W. Bush administration. He argued in 1999 that state sovereignty would not be sustainable in the long term. In 2001, Udo Di Fabio, who then was judge at the German Federal Constitutional Court, argued that national constitutional systems were challenged, first by increasing international and supranational cooperation, and also by the opening up of nation states towards a new world society, and finally, by the dissolution of borders in the global economy. Some authors saw the European Union as a direct threat to the nation state. Specifically, and I quote, the profound Europeanization of national legal systems, national governance structures, indeed of the entire political culture of the nation state. And lastly, Dieter Grimm, here in the middle, as also former judge at the Federal Constitutional Court in Germany, in 2009 he saw state sovereignty in decline against international organizations. So it's, you see, the threat is from the outside. The threat goes against national sovereignty, and the state needs to be defended. But the perhaps most frequently mentioned aspects of this perceived crisis narrative was the economy. The problems addressed here are the deregulation of goods and financial markets and the relocation of jobs and production sites due to competition in the global world economy. This deprived national governments of their control instruments and thus of their ability to govern. The Keynesian interventionist and welfare state is being replaced by the neoliberal competition state, as the phrasing went. Keynesian, not Keynesian. Sorry for that. It's Keynes. But you know what I mean. The state would thus lose its agency in domestic and social policy, and that's the main problem. You can't govern in the social realm if you don't have the money, because the companies don't pay taxes anymore at home because they've relocated. Social liberal, Marxist, and left-wing socialist authors in particular have commented on this area. I'll give you some examples again. One example is the British political scientist Colin Crouch, who is widely read in Germany and who argues from a Marxist position, as I read him. He sees globalization primarily as an economic process leading to growing social inequality. He coined the term post-democracy, which I borrowed, in 2004. Globalization, he says, takes decisions to a level that democracy cannot reach. Globalization undoubtedly contributes to the problems that democracy suffers from today, as it is a system that works better on national scale than in larger geographical or political aspects. Another example, which is very prominent in Germany, is the German sociologist Wolfgang Streeck, who in 2021 published a book on the connection between globalism, as he calls it, and democracy. He makes a similar argument. In 2013, he blamed the global financial market capitalism for the crisis of democratic capitalism, a West German specialty. Streeck sees a conflict between democracy and social justice on the one hand, and the logic of the markets of capitalism on the other. Global markets were stripping the national welfare state and its Keynesian control instruments of their functionality. From Streeck's perspective, the nation state is also threatened by the European Union, which he sees as an instrument of undemocratic financial market capitalism. In this interpretation, democracy is dependent on social redistribution by the welfare state. To function, democracy therefore needs the ability of nation states to act with economic and fiscal sovereignty. And globalization is exactly attacking this target. The threat to the welfare state posed by economic globalization is indeed a central theme of this crisis narrative. In 1998, Jürgen Habermas wrote an essay about the extent to which the democratic welfare state, the, as he calls it, social democratic project of the post-war period, was endangered by globalization. His conclusion was that globalization threatened a society's ability to govern itself democratically. On the one hand, decisions could no longer be implemented in a binding manner, and on the other, any weakening of the welfare state would reduce the opportunities for individuals to participate in society and democracy. The third element of these concerns relates to the societal level and is particular to national identity, which seemed to become undermined by increasing levels of immigration. This is why I chose as an example this image of migrants arriving on a bridge at the border between Austria and Germany in 2015. It's one of many such photographs, and even these images triggered the experience or the idea that there is a crisis. Eindruck einer Krise. A prominent example of this attitude is the late German historian Hans-Ulrich Wehler, who declared in an interview with the newspaper Taz in 2002, I quote, "Muslims cannot be integrated." This was relating to the discussion in Germany whether the European Union should take on, how do you say, adopt Turkey as a member state, open membership discussions with Turkey. So that's the context. It did not relate to 2015, of course. So to him and many others, immigration weakened the coherence of national society. He, Wehler, saw an insurmountable cultural barrier, that's a quote, between European and Muslim culture. More broadly speaking, globalization replaced, from his point of view, a formerly homogeneous national identity by supranational forms of cultural and personal identity, where people's cultural horizon blended the culture of their family's origins with that of their new home. On the other hand, subnational, local or regional, and often ethnic identities also gained in importance. In any case, the identity of the members of a community was no longer solely based or tethered to the national territory. As national identity became more ambivalent, the criteria for belonging to the political community of the nation also became unclear, and thus the right to political and social participation. The criteria of nationhood have always been ambiguous. But now this ambiguity became more visible owing to a transnationalization of culture and to increased immigration. People reacted with rejection, for instance, when the affiliation of people with a migrant background was questioned, even though they had been part of the community for three generations. Culture was crucial to the idea of nationhood in the sense of a broad concept of culture that encompassed values and legal systems as well as language. Literature, music, and religion also belonged to this combination, this group. But it was also understood as something territorial, demarcated by geographical borders. It is identity, national identity in that case. These authors, worrying about globalization, very much worried about a deterritorialization of culture. This was caused, in their eyes, by increasing mobility, especially through migration and the resulting hybrid cultures, as Canclini has called it. It was also caused by the dissolution of national boundaries in the media and by the increasing placelessness of culture on the internet. In fact, culture being relatively independent of geographical location is one of the central aspects of the concept of globalization. Overall, globalization is understood as a dissolution of boundaries, as a denationalization of the economy, governance, and culture. This also pertains to the question of membership in the political and social community. The American social philosopher Sila Ben Habib put it this way. I put the quote here so you can follow me. It's a lengthy quote, but I think it's important. The quote goes, "The modern nation state has introduced one main category to regulate belonging, that is citizenship. However, we are now living at a time in which the sovereignty of this form of government, which is the nation state, is crumbling and the institutional concept of the citizen is increasingly dissolving. New forms of belonging have emerged. As a result, the boundaries of the political community, as established by the nation state system, are no longer an adequate basis for regulating belonging." End of quote. The power of the state to integrate local, regional, and ethnic identities seemed to be dwindling. The weakening of national identity also seemed to jeopardize the legitimacy of rule. So summing up these diagnoses of decline, globalization threatened the nation state and liberal democracy by a combination of different structural and ideational changes. One side of the problem was the loss of the nation state's general capacity to govern, and above all, its ability to intervene in society by dint of the welfare state. The other side was the increasing indeterminacy of national identity and citizenship. Essentially, however, the denationalization and deterritorialization of state and society was the core problem that was dealt with here under the heading of globalization. And it was mostly social liberal authors from a West German background who voiced these concerns. I find this remarkable and in need of explanation. So far, I've introduced these narratives, these laments. And now I'm going to use them as source material and look at the author's background and context and dig into the 1960s and 70s. So we're going to travel in time. Historicizing the national framework of social liberal thought. Let me just mention, social liberal is a, how do you say it, goes back to the 1960s. It harks back to the late 1960s and early 70s as a concept when a coalition of social democrats and liberals formed a government. The West German experience of the late 60s and 70s is expressed particularly in the social liberal topos of democracy as self-governance of a society. At that time, the Grand Coalition, that was a CDU and SPD coalition, and the following social liberal coalition, SPD and FDP, attempted to create the social, legal, and economic preconditions for the participation of as many citizens as possible in the democratic process. The instrument they chose were social reforms. Education, social security, and infrastructural development were intended to break down social barriers and promote the liberalization and democratization of West German society. As Chancellor Willy Brandt put it, mehr Demokratie wagen, to dare more democracy, or daring to have more democracy might be better. Now the result was a, quote, welfare state cum mass democracy, typical for Western countries of the 1960s and 70s, or as Jürgen Habermas has called it, Wohlfahrtsstaatliche Massendemokratie westlichen Zuschnitts. That's what I tried to translate. Folks, I've been translating Habermas for this. Took me ages. And I apologize for the result, and I should apologize towards Jürgen Habermas for my trying to translate him into English. So that was a footnote. Now, this welfare state commerce democracy, typical for Western countries, was conceived of entirely within a national framework. Only the nation state seemed capable of guaranteeing the democratic self-government of a society. And now it was precisely this national framing that Jürgen Habermas in 1998 saw in danger. And I read the quote, "Our societies, which are constituted as nation states, but have been overrun by waves of denationalization, are today opening up to a world society initiated by economy." The term globalization here conjures up, and I quote Habermas, "the image of swelling rivers that can undermine border controls and cause the national edifice to collapse in the face of the territorial anchoring of the nation state." I tried to translate this. Hope you can read it. As a solution, Habermas offers the vision of a European federal state, which essentially means transferring the idea of the nation state to a higher geographical level. To me, Habermas' essay offers insights into a specifically West German and social liberal view of the transformation of state, society, and democracy after 1990. The original social liberal model of the old Federal Republic in the 1960s and 70s had also reflected a significant change in the relationship between the state and society. Here, the specifically West German experience, a German and West German experience of National Socialism, the Holocaust, the Allied occupation, and the founding of democracy in early Cold War was formative. This background, this specific German background, colored and distinguished the West German perception and interpretation of globalization and of denationalization. It shaped the generation of what Dirk Moses has called the 45ers, that is, those who were born in the 1920s. Their cohort rebuilt post-war Germany, and they governed and shaped the Federal Republic from the end of the 1960s to the end of the 1990s. They saw themselves as part of a transnational Western liberal consensus of values. In the course of the 1950s and 60s, their concept of liberal democracy increasingly imbibed the Anglo-Saxon traditions of pluralist democracy. This Western, as they call it, tradition held diversity of opinion and conflicts of interest to be a fundamental characteristic of society. The task of democracy was to reflect the existing differences of interest and translate them into a political decision-making process. In the old Federal Republic of Germany, these group interests and conflicts were primarily conceived in economic terms, for instance, as conflict of interest between capital and labor. The main actors in this negotiation progress are political parties, unions, and associations. At the heart of this idealized model of democracy is a pluralistic society in which members have equal rights but different interests. West German notions of government were based on a very close connection between state and society. The role of the government was seen as an instrument of society, and society used it to work upon itself. The result was social reform, which aimed to improve the chances of the individual to participate in politics and society, as I mentioned. This included the aforementioned legal reforms, educational reforms, and infrastructural measures, but above all, the expansion of the welfare state, which was made possible by the high and steady economic growth during the post-war boom, and which was to be permanently secured through state control and planning. That was the idea. This concept of statehood strongly influenced how West German governments saw themselves and their relation to society until 1990. The idea of self-governance of a society became fundamental. I would even argue that in a divided country, the notion of society had replaced that of the nation. To better understand the dismay of my social liberal protagonists in the face of globalization, there's another aspect to consider. They understood the policy of social reform as an effort of modernization. Modernization was a fundamental mindset of that time, and it shaped the West German view of 19th century German history. I borrowed this from my lectures, just to sort of cartoonishly illustrate the 1970s idea of what 19th century history had been like in Germany. The corresponding narrative of German history goes like this. Germany had undergone a process of rapid economic modernization in the form of industrialization. But strangely enough, it had not followed the political modernization of Western countries. Instead, its nation building led to an illiberal political system, the Kaiserreich, the German Empire, and even to two world wars and national socialism. This development appeared deviant from the norm. Economic development ought to have triggered political modernization and liberalization, since usually both were closely interdependent. That is, of course, the German Sonderweg, the special path narrative that I was taught in school and at university. This perception of a normalized path leading from industrialization to liberal democracy was deeply influenced in turn by American modernization theory of the 1950s. Hans Ulrich Wehler, for instance, as a doctoral student, imbibed this kind of social science and brought it back into historiography in Germany, which was very influential throughout the 70s and 80s. History, in reality, though, does not work like that. But this notion served as an explanation of what had so horribly gone wrong in Germany. Crucially, this German special path, Sonderweg, had been overcome since around 1960 in the perception of contemporaries. And thus the fateful incompleteness of modernization, the unvollständige Modernisierung, had been completed by social reforms and social liberal governments and societies who now governed themselves. And this was achieved through political modernization in Western Germany, and above all, through a deliberate process of governmental reforms leading towards democratization and liberalization, which I just said. It was inspired by a new and critical understanding of German history, inspired by modernization theory. In the end, at least according to Jürgen Habermas, Hans Ulrich Wähler and many others, the Federal Republic of Germany had become a normal Western society. And I owe you this. I just talked across this. This is Hans Ulrich Wähler and his most important publications of the 1970s and onwards. He also wrote a 5-volume history of German history, which is seminal, in fact. Huge and important and good. Still, I need modernization theory as something to deconstruct for my argument. I mean, having used Habermas as source, I might as well use Wähler as a source. Doesn't matter. Chapter 4. And this is, I'm running out of time. We're coming toward my conclusion, so bear with me for a little more time, but not much. This last chapter is basically a hidden conclusion. I've called it, for lack of a better idea, the post-national constellation, globalization and West German notions of democracy. So the narrative I've introduced you to was a fundamental tenet of my social liberal protagonists. But after 1990, basically this narrative of westernization, as we used the shorthand, we called it, and you luckily enough introduced it before. After 1990, it lost its explanatory power and its hegemonic role in the political and cultural discourse. Previously, with the end of the post-war boom in the 1970s, end of post-war boom, the structural and theoretical foundations of the social interventionist reform policy had begun to erode. The West European economy underwent a structural transformation. Keynesian management no longer functioned and was replaced by supply-side economics. This was resulting in a deregulation of the markets. Together, this transformed the relationship between society and state and how it was perceived. But not until the national framework of political thought lost its significance did the fear of the end of the modern nation state and with it of democracy gain resonance. Sorry for this sentence. Did you follow? Right. At first glance, this seems counterintuitive. With the end of the division of Germany in 1990, the nation state was re-established, and yet it was just at this time that the national mindset lost its self-evidence. This was due to the growing global integration of production, trade and financial markets, due to deeper European integration since the Maastricht Treaty, and to the growing diversity of society. Since the end of the 90s, these various factors have been interpreted as the result of globalization in the singular, coherent macro process. The waning self-evidence of national thought in the 90s and 2000s and the rise of the globalization discourse are closely connected. However, globalization is not simply the external cause that undermines national borders. Instead, the erosion of the idea of living and acting within closed borders is itself part of globalization. As the sociologist Ulrich Beck has put it, with globalization, and I quote, a central premise of the first modernity is overturned, namely the idea of living and acting in closed and mutually delimitable spaces of nation states and their corresponding national societies. In a similar vein, the political scientist Michael Zull suggests that the term denationalisierung, that is denationalization, is actually a more precise term for globalization. It's one and the same. Hence, the dwindling validity and explanatory power of the national framework of political thought was at the heart of the problem. For if globalization is understood as denationalization, as a conceptual dissolution of borders, of boundaries, and as a deterritorialization, then it can certainly be seen as a threat to the national framing of state, society, and liberal democracy. But in the eyes of my social liberal protagonists, the achievements of the 1945ers, who had turned West Germany into a kind of normal Western country, a stable liberal democracy, were called into question, especially when, in the mid-2010s, open conflict arose over questions of cultural identity in a post-migrant society. From the perspective of social liberals West German by upbringing, the new political category of identity seemed to question the liberal principle of equality. the idea of politics as a dispute between legally equals over essential economic interests. But the conflict should be over economic interests and not about identity and culture. To me, in retrospect, and I'm nearing the finish line, to me, in retrospect, it looks more like an attempt at defending the hegemonic position within the German political discourse. For these crisis narratives and warnings can be read as struggles over the fundamental concepts of society, state, and democracy. Formerly influential representatives and supporters of a strictly national foundation of liberal democracy experienced the ongoing transformation as decline. And decline not only of the nation state, but of their own world and role within it. Allow me one more last comment, one more last remark. You will ask that isn't there a crisis of democracy? An actual, real crisis of democracy unfolding all around us. And yes, there is, very much so. But my point is globalization as such is not the culprit. The threat to democracy is coming from the inside. It is the disdain for the rule of law and for parliamentary democracy that is growing within Western societies. It is the idea of the people being pitted against the elites or the politicians. It is the idea that a political community would have to be homogeneous and delimited in order to function. So that was my rant at the end. Thanks very much for listening, and I'm really looking forward to your comments. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. Follow us on social media and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.